Trump says allegations he raped a woman in Bergdorf Goodman are lies, while the woman at the heart of the accusation stands her ground. A searing photograph of a man and his dead daughter on the Rio Grande River goes around the world and makes incredible comment and incredible impact. The Kushner deal on Palestine is dead on arrival, and why the marijuana legalization bill failed in Albany. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, June 25th, 2019. Acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner John Sanders is resigning amid heightened security scrutiny over the administration's treatment of migrant children detained in facilities along the southern border. Sanders' exit, which he confirmed Tuesday, is an email to CBP, Customs and Border Patrol employees, marks the latest high-profile departure at President Donald Trump's Department of Homeland Security, creating a new leadership vacuum atop the nation's chief border enforcement agency as the struggles to quell a surge in Central American migrants entering the U.S. through Mexico. And a photograph showing a man and his 23-month-old daughter lay face down in shallow water along the bank of the Rio Grande, his black shirt hiked up to his chest with the girl's head tucked inside. Her arm was draped around his neck, suggesting she clung to him in her final moments. The searing photograph of the sad discovery of their bodies on Monday, captured by journalist Julia Leduc and published by Mexican newspaper La Jornada, highlights the perils faced by mostly Central American migrants fleeing violence and poverty, hoping for asylum in the United States. According to Leduc's reporting for La Jornada, Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez, frustrated because the family from El Salvador was unable to present themselves to U.S. authorities and request asylum, swam across the river on Sunday with his daughter Valeria. He set her on the U.S. bank of the river and started back for his wife, Tanya Vanessa Avalos, but seeing him move away, the girl threw herself into the waters. Martinez returned and was able to grab Valeria, but the current swept them both away. The account was based on remarks by Avalos to police at the scene. Amid tears and screams, Leduc told the Associated Press. Details of the incident were confirmed Tuesday by a Tamaulipas government official who was not authorized to discuss the matter publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity, and by Martinez's mother back in El Salvador, Rosa Ramirez, who spoke with her daughter-in-law by phone afterward. When the girl jumped in is when he tried to reach her, but when he tried to grab the girl, he went in further and he couldn't get out, Ramirez told the Associated Press. He put her in his shirt, and I imagine he told himself, I've come this far, and decided to go with her. From the scorching Sonora Desert to the fast-moving Rio Grande, the 2,000-mile U.S.-Mexico border has been at a times deadly crossing between the ports of entry. A total of 283 migrant deaths were recorded last year. The toll so far this year has not been released. In recent weeks alone, two babies, a toddler and a woman, were found dead on Sunday, overcome by the sweltering heat. Elsewhere, three children and an adult from Honduras died in April after their raft capsized on the Rio Grande, and a six-year-old from India was found dead earlier this month in Arizona, where temperatures routinely soar well above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The search for Martinez and his daughter was suspended Sunday due to darkness, and their bodies were discovered the next morning near Matamoros, Mexico, across from Brownsville, Texas, several hundred yards from where they had tried to cross, just a half a mile from the International Bridge. And in a rambling answer to reporters in the Oval Office Tuesday afternoon, President Trump stated that the conditions of children held in detention camps at the border is better than under President Obama. He added that Democrats and transients was to blame for reports that children were being held in barbaric conditions.
I'm very concerned. It's in much better shape than it ever was. A lot of these young children come from places that you don't even want to know about, the way they've lived, the way they've been, the way that the poverty that they grew up in. But with that, if we can get this bill signed, we'll be able to do it. The Democrats don't want to sign anything. And now I think they're going to probably sign this, from what I understand. I call it humanitarian aid. This isn't even about border. At the same time, you see the numbers are way, way down. Mexico has been really helping us a lot. They have very strong immigration laws. They are moving 15,000 people or 16,000 people to our southern border, and they move 16,000 troops to their southern border, which is pretty incredible. And a lot of signs are coming out where the cartels and all of the bad folks, the coyotes, as they call them, and all of the bad people that are bringing young children and taking advantage horribly. It's a form of slavery. It's horrible what they're doing to young children. You understand, you've reported on it. A lot of that is stopping now because of what we're doing and because of what's happening on the border.
Trump told reporters that he did not personally know Commissioner Sanders and did not ask him to step down, though the president claimed he was aware there was going to be a change at the CBP.
As far as the wall is concerned, the wall is heavily under construction. The Army Corps of Engineers is doing a great job. We're doing a lot of wall right now, and we expect to have 400 miles built by the end of next year. That's a lot, and we're building them in the right places. We're picking areas where we need it the most. And it's having a tremendous effect.
Did you ask your Customs and Border Protection head, John Sanders, to resign? Do you know why he's leaving his post?
No, I know there was going to be a change there. I've made changes, very good changes. We're moving some people around into different locations. The game has changed a lot because of what Mexico is doing. We're able to do things that we wouldn't have been able to do before. The problem with our Border Patrol, who are phenomenal people, but they're not allowed because the laws are so bad with catch and release and all of the different things, including chain migration, the visa lottery. The laws are so bad, and the asylum rules and laws are so bad that our Border Patrol people, who are so incredible, aren't allowed to do their jobs. So because Mexico is now, for the first time in 50 years, helping us, and we really appreciate it, we're able to make certain changes that we wouldn't have been able to make before.
News of Sanders' resignation, first reported by the New York Times, came hours after the administration on Tuesday returned more than 100 migrant children to a Border Patrol facility outside El Paso, Texas, that had been criticized for its lack of resources and unsanitary conditions. It's unclear if Sanders' departure is related to the growing controversy, which included children taking care of other children, a lack of toothbrushes and soap, and other basic necessities. Meanwhile, the House is scheduled to vote later Tuesday on a $4.5 billion emergency measure to fund the Federal Refugee Office, a contentious piece of legislation that has divided Democrats and Speaker Nancy Pelosi's caucus, who are vehemently opposed to Trump's immigration agenda. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar on Monday described the facilities operated by Customs and Border Protection as overwhelmed. The disturbing allegations that President Trump raped a woman in a dressing room at the Bergdorf Goodman department store. The victim is columnist E. Jean Carroll. She said in a cover story in New York Magazine that she remembered Trump forcing his fingers around my private area. She spoke about the attack Monday night on the Anderson Cooper Show on CNN.
It was a fight. I want women to know that I did not stand there. I did not freeze. I was not paralyzed, which is a reaction that I could have had because it's so shocking. No, I fought, and it was over very quickly. It was against my will, 100%, and I ran away.
Trump denied the allegations, saying Carroll was not his type, and then denying he knew her, despite of a photograph of them together.
I have no idea who this woman is. This is a woman who's also accused other men of things, as you know. It is a totally false accusation. I think she was married, as I read, I have no idea who she is, but she was married to a actually nice guy, Johnson, a newscaster, standing with my coat on in a line. Give me a break. With my back to the camera. I have no idea who she is. What she did is it's terrible. What's going on? So it's a total false accusation, and I don't know anything about her. And she's made this charge against others. And you know, people have to be careful because they're playing with very dangerous territory. And when they do that, and it's happening more and more, when you look at what happened to Justice Kavanaugh, and you look at what's happening to others, you can't do that for the sake of publicity. New York Magazine is a failing magazine. It's ready to go out of business from what I hear. They'll do anything they can. But this was about many men, and I was one of the many men that she wrote about. It's a totally false accusation. I have absolutely no idea who she is. There's some picture where we're shaking hands. It looks like at some kind of event. I have my coat on. I have my wife standing next to me. And I didn't know her husband, but he was a newscaster. But I have no idea who she is. None whatsoever. It's a false accusation, and it's a disgrace that a magazine like New York, which is one of the reasons it's failing, people don't read it anymore. So they're trying to get readership by using me. It's not good. You know, there were cases that the mainstream media didn't pick up, and I don't know if you've seen them, and they were put on Fox, but there were numerous cases where women were paid money to say bad things about me. You can't do that. You can't do that. And those women did wrong things. That women were actually paid money to say bad things about me. But here's a case. It's an absolute disgrace that she's allowed to do that.
And Mayor Bill de Blasio, also a candidate for president, said he would direct the NYPD to investigate Carroll's charges if a complaint were made. That despite the statute of limitations that's run out on the alleged crime. And a lawsuit that alleges that the 2020 census question pushed by the Trump administration violates minorities' rights will be sent back to a federal court in Maryland so new evidence can be considered. That's according to a U.S. appeals judge that ruled today, Tuesday. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals decision comes a day after U.S. District Judge George Hazel of Maryland suggested in an opinion that racial discrimination and partisan power plays could be the underlying motives in asking everyone in the country about citizenship status. The Fourth Circuit's order sending the case back to Hazel could be pivotal. The decision today opens up a potentially new legal front in the fight against the citizenship question, said Thomas Wolf, counsel for Democracy Program at Brennan Center for Justice and an expert on census matters. The Supreme Court is expected to decide this week whether the Trump administration can add its citizenship question to the 2020 population survey. However, the justices are not considering legal questions about whether the citizenship addition might be discriminatory. And U.S. President Donald Trump's deal of the century, also in Washington, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer accused the president of a muddled policy on Iran that brought both countries to the brink of war. Schumer said before launching military action, Trump must follow the 1970s War Powers Act and consult Congress.
We all worry that he would bumble into a war. This morning, the Iranian president personally insulted our president. President Trump responded, threatening obliteration against Iran. That is exactly what I'm talking about when I say we are worried that President Trump could bumble us into war. And that's why Democrats are urging Leader McConnell to allow a vote on an amendment to the NDAA concerning Iran. We're pushing a bipartisan amendment. Senators Udall, Merkley, Murphy, Kane, Paul, and Lee. And it would prohibit funds authorized by the current NDAA to be used to conduct hostilities against the government of Iran unless Congress agreed. This amendment says if President Trump wants to go to war, he needs Congress to authorize it first as the founders intended. Three simple words: no unauthorized wars. We learned that hard lesson in Iraq years ago. It would not diminish our military's ability to respond to provocation or act in self-defense. The amendment we have filed explicitly says that if American soil troops are attacked, the president can respond. But it also says that we have to have an open debate. Now, I'm getting some heartening news here, but I'm not getting it until I know your password. Leader McConnell said a few minutes ago here, we are not opposed to having the vote. We're working to have that vote, passing the NDAA. Ask Senator Schumer why we can't work on it in the next few days. I say, yes, we can. We should sit down and work out an agreement to have this amendment. It'll be voted yes or no. I don't know the answer to that. And then we pass the NDAA. That's the way to go. That's the way our caucus feels. Our caucus is strongly united in that we must have a vote.
The National Defense Authorization Act is the military budget of the United States. Trump has said he does not need the approval of Congress to launch military strikes against Iran. And U.S. President Trump's deal of the century, his administration's proposal for solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, kicked into gear in Manama, Bahrain this week as officials from the region gathered for the so-called Peace to Prosperity workshop. Already skeptics are voicing concerns, saying the American side is using money to bribe the Palestinians. The initial economic stage of the deal hopes to drum up $50 billion in investment money that primarily is expected to come from other Arab nations, principally in the Gulf, the Persian Gulf region. Participants of the Manama meeting will discuss projects and conditions for investments in more detail. Then, based on the outcome of this meeting, the next step would be to fashion a political settlement that would translate financial commitments into reality on the ground in Palestine. However, Palestinians have derided the plan as an economy-first approach that is doomed to fail. The Palestinian Authority is arguing for a reverse order, a political settlement first, money later, an approach that would tackle the difficult questions of establishing a Palestinian state and the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands and allow refugees to return. Attorney Stanley Cohen has represented Hamas and other Palestinian groups and individuals for a quarter century. Cohen says the plan put forward by Trump's son-in-law and New York City real estate tycoon Jared Kushner is a fraud.
There is no plan. It's a total scam. It's a loan shark. The loan shark thinks this is about money and cash, because this loan shark is his entire political career. Stealing, doing developments with ghost money, and screwing people as he tosses them out into the housing court. There is no plan. It simply is rooted in notions of exceptionalism, of Zionist exceptionalism at its worst and at its most barren and public face, in which the theory is, we'll give you $50 billion to develop some sort of economy, which you'll repay with VIG, and in exchange, you'll stop this silliness of maintaining your self-determination, your rights of liberty and justice and equality. It is the typical classic New York City real estate scam, where you pay someone enough of a kickback, and they will go ahead and pass the buck on to some other sucker. There is no plan. It's all about money. It's all about the theft of Palestinian rights, self-determination, and history. It's going nowhere but where it belongs, and that's the garbage heap of history.
This plan comes up at a time when the United States is threatening to go to war with Iran. And what it seems to me is that it always points to that the real underlying problem in the Middle East that interacts with all these others is the Palestinian problem.
Well, Palestine has been a tripwire for 70 years. One quarter of the world is Muslim. Palestine is the penultimate issue in Islam and in certain quarters of Christianity as well, given Bethlehem, given the Christian community in Palestine and in Jerusalem, which is strong and vibrant. It is the penultimate issue in the Middle East, North African, and Muslim world, and has been for 70 years. It will not go away. It can't be purchased. It can't be extinguished. And we see president after president, now land thief after land thief, who believes this is just about bribing some folks and making it go away. Well, the fact of the matter is there are, 11 million Palestinians that are stateless people at this particular point. It is the longest lasting system of apartheid in the world. It has resulted in the displacement of millions of Palestinians, of well over a million being imprisoned by military tribunals without trials. It has resulted in just the 10 years, the last 10 years alone, 100,000 people shot or crippled, at least 10,000 murdered, while the world sits around and looks for the next land scam. The problem is that it continues to be this notion that Palestinian self-determination is like Western exceptionalism. Everything is for sale. And it's not.
What do you think should be done?
It really doesn't matter what I or any other negotiator does. The fact of the matter is there are demographic realities at foot here. There will be, sooner or later, one state. It will be a secular state. It will be one person, one vote. We will see the end of barriers, barricades, separation, and the nation state. It's a matter of time. Israel and Zionists have lost the support of millennial Jews worldwide and in the United States, without whom they can't continue. Increasingly, the world community is beginning to embrace the BDS movement. Increasingly, Israel is becoming isolated. And sooner or later, there will be one state. And it will be a secular state with Jerusalem as its capital, with one person, one vote, with full equality. And it will go where it will go. It is no different than apartheid was in South Africa and what brought it to its resolution, and it will happen again here.
Attorney Stanley Cohen has represented Hamas and other Palestinian groups and individuals for more than a quarter century. And in Albany, despite the three most powerful people at the Capitol publicly supporting marijuana legalization this year, state lawmakers left Albany last week with only a consolation prize. Advocates, lobbyists, and lawmakers attribute the legislative failure to tepid support from Governor Andrew Cuomo, Democratic senators playing both sides of the issue, apathy from legislative leaders, and a well-organized opposition. According to one frustrated lobbyist who worked on the issue, there's plenty of blame to go around. As a result, marijuana legalization, which appeared to be a fait accompli in December when the governor prioritized it for the first 100 days of his third term, was declared dead on Wednesday by the Senate's sponsor. It came very close to crossing the finish line, but we ran out of time, Senator Liz Krueger, a Manhattan Democrat, said in a statement. Both sides of the marijuana debate are united in their belief that the governor wasn't committed to legalization, saying he only lent his lip service to the movement throughout the year. His support never materialized the way it did on other issues, such as rallies and lawmakers' districts and press conferences with celebrities. Assemblymember Richard N. Gottfried is a supporter of pot legalization. He blames the failure on conservative Democratic state senators on Long Island.
It seems there was a handful of Democratic state senators from Long Island who were not on board and who were concerned that their communities were opposed. And so there didn't seem to be the votes to pass it in the state Senate. And so it fell apart.
What would this bill have done?
It would have set up regulation of and taxation of cannabis, similar to the way we treat alcohol and there would be, you know, regulation and licensing of the stores that could sell it and the people who could produce it, as there is with alcohol, in addition, there would be revenue flowing to the state. I've always felt that the reason we should be reforming our marijuana laws is not for the revenue, but for the justice of it.
I was going to bring that up as far as the revenue, because it's brought so many billions of dollars, and a lot of that money has gone exactly to youth programs and to schools and things like that. I thought that would have been a winner there.
Well, I would
the more conservative.
So. And again, I think a lot of the legislators who were not on board are going to hear from their constituents, and I hope next session we will be able to put this back together again. Certainly on the assembly side, while there were some legislators who were wary of doing this, there was very strong support.
How about the governor? What did he think, Governor Cuomo, on this whole thing?
Well, the governor, has come a long way from 5 years ago when he really had to be dragged to agree to a somewhat watered down medical marijuana bill, which I sponsored. He has done a lot to strengthen our medical marijuana program, which I've been delighted to see, and the proposal to allow adult use of marijuana was part of his budget proposal, and it just didn't come together in the budget. And then we tried doing it as a separate bill. He was very supportive. His staff was very supportive in negotiating efforts. It just ultimately stumbled and couldn't make it.
What of the prosecutors? I know that there was a lot of resistance from the prosecutors upstate in different places.
There is some law enforcement opposition, which doesn't surprise me. Although most of that has related not so much to the marijuana trade itself as to concern about people driving while under the influence. My feeling about that is that there are undoubtedly people driving under the influence of marijuana today, and I'd rather they be consuming a regulated product where they can tell from the label the concentration and better regulate their behavior.
And just to wrap up, the whole idea of racial justice, that this is skewed so much against people of color that very few, and maybe in those suburban districts, very few of their constituents were arrested if they're not minority districts. And maybe they didn't hear it for that reason that we know in New York City. That
That's undoubtedly true. You know, one thing we did do, which we've struggled to do for a number of years, under New York's marijuana decriminalization law, which passed 42 years ago, as part of getting that enacted, we had to agree to a provision that said, while possessing a small amount was only a violation, which is, you know, like littering, if you possess it in plain view in a public place, it becomes a misdemeanor. And it was that provision that resulted in 50,000 arrests a year under Giuliani and Bloomberg, overwhelmingly of young men of color. And we did pass a bill, which I think the governor may have already signed. If not, he's expected to, that eliminates that misdemeanor penalty. And that's going to be a very important step for preventing the ruining of a lot more young lives.
So that wasn't entirely a wash. There have been some small additions to the law, right?
That is correct. And that bill, by the way, also has provision for letting people wipe out the previous convictions for that public possession misdemeanor. So that's gonna be a very important help.
So there is actually some advance that was made in this legislative session as far as public trying to make it a violation instead of a misdemeanor for public display. Mm-hmm. And how would people be allowed to expunge their records?
You would apply to a court and show what your record was, and the court would at that point pretty automatically wipe out the conviction. The correct answer to the question then of have you ever been convicted of a crime would be no, because it would have been expunged.
I see. Very good. Anything you'd like to add?
Well, I think legislators need to hear from voters on this, like on so many other issues.
Assemblymember Richard N. Gottfried is a supporter of marijuana legalization in New York State. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, June 25th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.